I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. We're right.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig. Presented by G2G Bars. On 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back. It is 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, it's your Friday. So when I was a kid, I was in third grade. I was in a reading group because I had like some – they were worried I had dyslexia. And sometimes it creeps up on me again.
Yeah.
I didn't have dyslexia. I just didn't – I didn't pay attention very much. So that was my third grade.
So you didn't have dyslexia. You just had
no,
like,
you know what happened? I turned a corner.
Attention deficit disorder.
Listen, I turned a corner – I learned to love books, so I started reading a lot more when you're like in that third, fourth grade range, and the rest is history. And, I love history books, by the way, too. But something popped up on my computer, and it said something about the market being bullish. And I thought it was like, dude, the market this week has been bull. Like, I thought it was BS. And because I kind of agreed. And I think in my head, I was like, yeah, the market has been kind of BS this week. Man, it was crap. No, bullish. Bullish.
So you just have bad eyesight.
Well, I was like staring at the
group. Are you trying to wish something into
No, I just didn't know. I didn't
existence.
Know what it was. I didn't know what was going on. So the market is bullish. It's not BS.
Yes.
Okay? Okay. Our brackets are bullish, by the way.
We're doing okay.
Scott and I are both still – Scott's in the lead.
Okay.
And I'm in a solid second place. I'm in a solid number two for the station.
I'm number one. You're number two.
There you go. Okay. So – I wanted to kick everything off here with our guy Ben Anderson, our Jazz insider for KSLSports.com. Ben, we can only do victory laps like when we can take them. A day and a half into the NCAA tournament is not usually when people do, like, you know, they don't win their bracket on these first day and a half. But we'll take, you know, Scott and I will take the miniature victory of this. How's your bracket doing?
Poorly for the first couple of days, but I think 14 of my sweet 16 teams are still around. All of my Elite Eight teams are still around, so we're okay.
Yeah, okay. See, it's a long game. It's a marathon, not a sprint. So that's where we are. I walked into the studio today, and you guys were talking about this, and the brackets are dumb. I just don't even think about – I mean, they're not dumb. I don't think about them. If I get too caught up in it, you can convince yourself of anything in March Madness. And so this is what I like about the NBA is that like teams, when you watch these games, I definitely watch the college game, and you tell me if this is different for you because you see way more basketball on the pro level than we do, probably watch a lot more than we do. There is a massive disparity in the college and the pro game. What's the biggest difference between the NBA and a college guy if somebody is – or in a college, like, you know, game that you watch? What do you see as the biggest differences?
Well, unfortunately, it's the size is kind of the main thing. I mean, most of the guards in college are 6'1", 6 feet tall, some guys even smaller. And that is a huge part of it. And honestly, it just makes the game harder when you're that small. And then when you play against these bigger teams, which I think Utah State ran into yesterday with Missouri, you just see how big that gap is, the ability to get easy shots, get rebounds, et cetera. But now the NBA really is so skilled at every position that basically every player has to be able to do, or at least threaten to be able to do, everything on the floor, pass, shoot, and dribble, and then defend multiple positions. And still, I think with a really good post player in college, you're probably going to be okay. You'll probably survive, even if you don't have you know, a truly elite floor spacing big. And in fact, some of those floor spacing bigs, look at Brandon Carlson for the Utes, don't have the same impact in college that they could at the next level, where he might have a chance to go and make an NBA team and be a pretty good player. And don't get me wrong, he was Utah's best player this year, but not good enough to, you know, get them to the tournament, for example.
So I'm leading in this bracket challenge right now. But I'm going to fall off the cliff pretty soon because I picked Arizona to win the national championship, and, they lost.
That's fine.
So I need another way of watching March Madness, and I really like this article that you wrote about potential prospects that the Jazz have or could you know, probably want.
At least give it a gander,
and,
right?
And at least it gives me something to watch, you know. So now I've become a scout for the Utah Jazz, so – so what are some of the players that the Jazz potentially could have, and where are they in this tournament?
Yeah, the first guy I would really key in on, and he actually won yesterday, so there's a chance you're going to see him make a deep run, is Grady Dick. He plays for Kansas, about 6'7" wing, really shoots the ball well, super athlete. I mean, he's just going to be a good NBA player. He's a relatively safe pick, and I think that's why you like him. But he's also not so safe that he doesn't have any upside. Sometimes we use safe, meaning they don't really have a chance to get to that next level. I think he actually does have quite an opportunity to grow still, as he's just a freshman. So that's the biggest name I would key in on, because I think he has an opportunity to be there for the Jazz wherever they're picking, 10 or 11. If Kansas plays particularly well, I think he could really rise up some draft boards, and that's always, you know, that's always dangerous. But I've got an article at KSLSports.com where I wrote about eight players, that are going to have a chance to be there on the board for the Jazz. Some of them are as high as, you know, Brandon Miller, who could end up going number two overall from Alabama. We'll see what happens with him. Alabama is one of the favorites, obviously, to make the championship game, and he might be the best player in college basketball, but he has his off-the-court issues, including delivering the gun that was used to kill somebody a couple of months ago. So that's just a hideous story. But, unfortunately, Chris Murray from Iowa got eliminated in the first round yesterday. That's a guy who I would keep an eye on, who might be a little bit more in that Ochai Agbaji type player, who wasn't very good his first 2 years in the NBA and then really exploded this year in his third season, and is big and can shoot. And that's kind of what I think I would expect Danny Ainge to look for. I wouldn't really look at a lot of small guards for Danny Ainge, even though there's a few of those names that have been mentioned. Arkansas has a couple of kids as well that have an opportunity. They advanced Nick Smith Jr. and Anthony Black. So they've got, there's certainly some guys to key in on.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you kind of get closer to the draft, and of course the thing that gets you closer to the draft is the end of the basketball season, this Jazz team's got quite a hill to climb over the next few weeks. Very difficult games, and starting with this weekend with a very difficult opponent coming into town, the Boston Celtics. What are the next... is it 13 games left or 12 games left for this Jazz team? How do they fare over these? What's the best version of how they fare over these next 13 games? And should we just kind of throw away the idea of the possibility of being in the play-in and being in the playoffs?
No, I think it's certainly still possible. And, in fact, you know, what happens tomorrow night against Boston? I think Friday you play Milwaukee. Those are the types of games where if you, you know, I don't want to say accidentally win one of those games, but if you win one of those games, all of a sudden, you know, you could jump from being, you know, the ninth pick in the league to the you know, 10th seed in the West. It's that tight together. And when you've got a couple of tiebreakers like you do over the Lakers and you do over the New Orleans Pelicans at this point in the season, it gets a little dicey. If you want to miss the playoffs, it could be tricky if you win one or two games that you weren't expecting. And you look, you know, Milwaukee last night lost to Indiana, and Indiana's not a very good team. Boston lost to Houston a couple of nights ago, and it's just 5-5 in its last 10. So these games that you may have chalked up as a loss are anything but guarantees at this point in the season, because teams are tired, guys are hurt. Some teams just have changed their attention to focus on the playoffs, and, you know, they just want to get there healthy, so they're going to rest guys more than usual, as long as they're happy to have home court advantage in the first round or second round. That might be enough for some of these teams. So we don't really know exactly what to expect. They're only a half game back of both the Lakers and the Thunder for the 10th and the 9th seed in the West. So it's all out there on the table. And at the same point, they're only two games ahead of the Portland Trail Blazers for what would be, I think, the 6th or the 7th pick in the draft. So if you lose to Boston tonight, you lose to Sacramento on Monday, which wouldn't shock anybody, and then you lose to Portland, I think it's Wednesday, all of a sudden, maybe you've been jumped in that group. You know, maybe you are in the 6th or 7th spot in the NBA overall, and you're really looking at getting a good draft pick. And then maybe you start looking at, hey, you know, it's not in your best intention at that point to try and climb back to get to the 10th spot or the 11th spot because you hurt your draft stock so significantly. So this four-game homestand, I think, is going to tell us a lot. If they somehow find a way to go, you know, 2-2 or even 3-1, I think the playoffs become a lot more realistic. If they lose 3 out of 4, I think you really start to look at their draft stock.
Earlier you talked about these players that are, you know, can improve their draft chances through a solid tournament. How big of an impact is that? I mean, how significant, how much weight do NBA teams place on playing really well in the March Madness tournament?
I do think recency bias always matters. I mean, I think we've seen, you know, historically guys who have big tournament runs end up getting drafted high, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. Kemba Walker led UConn to the title and a great run to the Big East, and ended up being I can't remember where he was, but he was certainly top 10 and has been a very good NBA player, had an all-star career. Derek Williams with Arizona got him to the championship game and, you know, was a bum after his second season in the league. But guys drafted him because he was big and he dominated that stretch. So that happens certainly. I think we probably see it a little bit less than we used to. But recency bias and winning at the biggest stage is always going to be appealing. You know, Deron Williams helped his draft stock a ton. Trey Burke helped his draft stock a ton. So there's not that, you know, it's not like we have to go that deep into the past to find examples where guys have helped their draft stock by performing well. And some of it's rightfully so. I mean, at this point, you're playing against the best competition you will during your college career. The stars generally do tend to shine at this point. And we've seen runs where guys like Gordon Hayward is a good example, who really improved his draft stock with Butler's run in the postseason and then ended up being a really good player as a result. So there are examples of guys proving at the biggest stage, C.J. McCollum's another good one, that can translate to NBA success. But you probably don't want to move him from 30th on your draft board to 2nd, to 4th. I think that's when you really start to get yourself in trouble. But if a guy moves himself from, hey, maybe he was 20 to number 10, or example, I brought up Grady Dick, who may be 10 or 11, maybe he moves up to 7, that's probably a little bit better information.
Steph Curry is one of those guys too. I mean, who I think I was introduced to Steph Curry, and you're watching him wearing a Davidson jersey, and you're going, I don't know who this kid is, but he shoots the freaking lights out. Jimmer Fredette benefited a massive amount and ended up probably, you know, being overvalued for what he had done. Now, he won also the Naismith Award, so that also adds to it. But I think when these guys have tournaments, it just solidifies. There's some GMs who love that, and they go, well, they've run the gauntlet of pressure, so maybe that will translate over into the NBA level. So, you know, I think people get just like picking these draft picks, you know, you just, who knows what you're going to get. I mean, Greg Odom, you think about these guys who ended up being bust but were extremely good college basketball players, and you just didn't know they were going to absolutely fall flat. This Jazz team, interesting stretch over the next week. They're going to play Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. So they have 4 games next week as opposed to the 1 that they had, and then they play again on Saturday. It's a frenetic time of year. What has Will Hardy learned to this point, 70-ish games into the season?
Well, I think you're still seeing some of the rookies come into their own a little bit. I mean, Ochai Agbaji, you look at how prolific he's become of a shooter over his last, he was 7 games, 8 games, 9 games, something like that. I mean, he's averaging almost 7 threes a game, which, considering he couldn't get on the floor his first 3 months of his career, to now really hoisting up a lot of shots. And he's not making them with great consistency, but he's able to be that type of prolific shooter. I think you get a little better sense, not just of, hey, are you an NBA player or not, but, hey, what type of role are you going to have in the league? You know, Simone Fontecchio over the last six games has gone from, ooh, this guy doesn't look like a player at all, to, hey, this guy might be one of the better shooters in the NBA that, you know, can get really hot really quickly. And maybe he's not a star, maybe he's not a, you know, regular rotation player, but every team seems to have, you know, two guys on their roster that if you need a change of pace for somebody who can come in and shoot shots and make threes for 5 to 10 minutes, he can really do that. And that might be his saving grace. So I think there's certainly still a lot to learn, especially from the young guys. But, you know, Chris Dunn's been a terrific story for the Jazz over the last couple of weeks and has earned himself a longer NBA career because he's made the most of this opportunity. And on the flip side, you know, Frank Jackson probably hasn't. And that's where these games are so valuable.
You know, speaking of Chris Dunn, and, you know, I think of all the players on the Jazz this year and the ones on the roster right now, which player has benefited the most from this season? You look at Lauri Markkanen, who turned into an all-star, and you mentioned Chris Dunn was a 10-day guy who turned into a, you know, a two-year deal. It's not guaranteed, but still. So who do you think, which player has benefited the most from this season and this experience with the Jazz?
I mean, Markkanen's probably legitimately made himself $100 million in the last 70 games, which is a pretty insane thing to say. But, yeah, he went from being a good player and maybe what we thought was the second-best player in this rotation to a guy who's going to get a max contract. You know, whether he, you know, has a down year next year, 2 years from now, I think we're going to look back at a guy who started on an all-star team and is going to be worthy of six figures and maybe, you know, high six figures. I mean, maybe he gets up close to $200 million, depending on what he can qualify for at that point. So that's a huge, huge jump for him. And then you really look over the last few games, and I'll be curious what Talen Horton-Tucker can continue to do. He had a great four-game stretch. Really, I thought, had a poor game in Miami. But as long as Colin Sexton's out and now Jordan Clarkson has missed the last few games, he's getting a bigger opportunity, and his game is so unique and his skill set so different that the Jazz might be willing to continue to invest in him a little bit more. And, you know, he's got a player option on his deal next year, which he's almost certainly going to pick up. I don't think he's done enough to earn more than the $10 million that he's owed, but the Jazz may say, well, if you've got that guy, do you need to keep Jordan Clarkson around, especially if his price tag is up around, you know, $100 million for four seasons or $70 million for three seasons. Those are the types of differences that we've started to see late in the season and guys who have had a big impact this year.
Ben Anderson, enjoy your weekend, man. Looking forward to the coverage over the weekend. It's actually going to be nice to have some freaking Jazz games over the next few days. Hang in there, man, and thanks for being with us, dude.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Yep.
There
thanks,
you go.
Ben
Anderson. Ben's so freaking smart, man. I love having
him. Yeah, and I'm so fascinated with all these different players that have, you know, showcased with the Jazz and really kind of risen to the occasion and who fits and where they fit and
sure.
Do they continue to develop. I don't know, it's just fascinating to me. I've loved this year with the Utah Jazz, and I'm just befuddled that I do. And it's just turned out
I didn't even think
this was comprehensible what's happened. Being able to watch the Jazz this year.
Do you think Lauri Markkanen, like, sat down with his wife and goes, if I play hard, I could earn us $100 million this year. But that's likely the number we're talking about.
Yeah.
Just an amazing max deal. And for a guy who, like, do you see him slowing down anytime? Like, does his game suddenly become?
No, I mean, because he's young and you just see his game's evolved.
Yeah.
Go back and watch him playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Chicago Bulls, and you just go, his game is different. It's very different today, and they've identified what his game is, and they're identifying what his game needs to get to, and you're seeing that this year, and it's fascinating to watch. But you know, so much of it is just keep playing. You know, just keep playing. Find ways. You know, he went over this last summer, and that was a big deal for him playing. Like he did, and that
sure.
Really changed things for him, and it gave the Jazz an opportunity to watch him and go, wait a minute, we see something here that, and had he not been playing over the summer, and it would have, you know, they wouldn't have seen that, and who knows where he'd be today.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.